Cool, man. No problem. No problem at all.
Who are you?
Star-Lord.
Who?
Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw. Forget it.
And welcome to the Flix Junkies podcast. I am John Clyde. With me is Travis Poppleton.
Hello, John.
And Curtis Linnell.
Hello.
There he is. And what you just heard was actually the new trailer from Guardians of the Galaxy, which we will get into. And you know what? Before we even jump in, I have to ask, did either of you even know what Guardians of the Galaxy was before Marvel announced they were going to be making it into a movie?
I just knew it was a comic book. I knew nothing other than that.
I wanted to. Like, I have some sort of pride because I read comic books from time to time, and I was embarrassed that I didn't know. But, like, if someone asked me, I don't know that I had enough pride to say, oh, I don't know it, but I can't wait. Like, I felt a little bit ashamed that I'd never heard of this group that was so popular, apparently.
Well, I am not a comic book reader and therefore had no shame that I had no idea. Not a clue. I'd never even heard of it before.
They're newer, you know, so they're not the classics, and so you kind of have to be a little more contemporary.
Well, that's what happens when you have a huge studio that doesn't have access to your biggest superheroes, right?
Right.
Like Spider-Man and X-Men. Well, we're going to get into that. We're going to break down the teaser trailer at least a little bit. We're also going to talk, there was a really, the best way to put it is kind of strange. I've never seen anything like this before, but what they called an Olympics preview for the film Unbroken was released. And it's actually the first time we got any footage from the film that's not even going to be released till next Christmas. We're going to be chatting about that a little bit. And as always, we have your picks for the week. For those who aren't familiar, what we do every week is we each pick a film from Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Redbox and let you know what you should be watching. And I'll tell you what, when I was going through Netflix, like, yeah, what should I pick this week? There's a lot of junk on there. So you guys are so welcome that we do this for you because there's a lot of garbage out there to sift through. And Kurt, you'll be doing the Redbox pick today. And every Tuesday, Redbox comes out with their new films.
Yes.
It was just a load of junk that came out this week. I don't know if anybody else saw that, but I mean, it's terrible stuff that came out.
I hardly recognized any of them that are on there.
Yeah, it's all this straight to video stuff. Which
Val Kilmer movies nowadays.
Val Kilmer and Cuba Gooding Jr. Yes. Just blew up your red boxes. but anyway, we do that every week. You can let us know what you think we should be watching from those on Netflix or Amazon Prime or Redbox. You can hit us up on Twitter at Flix Junkies. That's FlixJunkies. Also on our website, FlixJunkies.com, and Facebook, Flix Junkies as well. Just type in Flix Junkies and you'll stumble upon us at some point. It's basically how this works.
We'll show up.
Yeah. We'll pop up. But speaking of that, let's get into the picks right away. Curtis Linnell from OK.com, Redbox. What should we be getting from Redbox this week?
All right. One that I checked out, it came out last Tuesday, was kind of under the radar type film. It's called All Is Lost. It stars Robert Redford and Robert Redford only. There's a couple sharks and fishes in it. I don't think they got a screen credit, but for those that don't know, All Is Lost is about a guy that's on a ship. He's sailing by himself in the ocean, and what do they call those? Sailboat. That's the word I'm looking for.
His boat?
His sailboat collides with a shipping container that's just lost out in the middle of nowhere that fell off some shipping boat, and he gets a big hole in it, and so it's about him patching the hole up and being in the middle of the sea, and eventually his boat sinks, and that's not a spoiler alert. You can see from the...
And that's where the movie ends.
And then he dies. Just kidding. No, just kidding. And then he has to survive out in sea on this raft, and it's a movie that, like, there's probably about four sentences of dialogue pretty much at all, if any of that. Wow. The thing that's interesting about this movie, though, is I thought for sure when you have a movie like that, you think Hollywood's going to get like all crazy and creative and be like, all of a sudden, like there's going to be like a huge like attack of sharks and like different things. But it was a realistic approach to a movie that would happen to, if you were out sailing by yourself and you had a hole in your ship, think how survival would be. And so it sounds boring in a way, but in the same time, it was like very fascinating. And it was just like I said, it's nominated for the best edit for sound, for editing for sound. I know it sounds weird, but the sounds in it keep you really interested. I know it's weird to explain. It's one of those movies you just need to see to be like, oh, that is a good movie. And it's the best thing I think Robert Redford's done since Sneakers.
Wow.
That's big.
That is big.
And he there's a lot of people when the Oscar nominations came out. I don't know if you guys saw that too. A lot of people felt he got snubbed.
Yeah.
For not getting nominated for it. And he does the fact. I mean, he's old now. I mean, like, I forget every time I see him, I'm like, holy cow, Robert. I mean, I thought he was old in sneakers. I was like, what I was like, what happened to Robert? But nowadays, I'm like, whoa, he is really old. But he pulls it off fantastically. And there's nothing. I mean, there's no like flashbacks of being like my old life when I wasn't on the boat and stuff like that. It's just a straight up survival mode that he goes into, and you follow that journey. And it's just very interesting from start to finish. And it starts right off and it goes to the very end. And so, like I said, it's like Castaway without lesser words. And yeah, it's definitely worth a $1.29 to check it out for a night.
How does it compare to something like Castaway that uses other devices? It doesn't just have Tom Hanks on an island. How does Robert Redford do with just his face for, what is it?
Hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah, I think it was about an hour and a half around there and stuff like that.
According to this, it says an hour and 45. I didn't just pull that out of thin air.
Oh,
yeah, 106 minutes.
So. I'm used to John just pulling stuff out. I don't know what that means. But anyway, so it that's the funny thing is it keeps your attention from start to finish, even though there's, like I said, like Hollywood's main thing is to be like, let's have a flashback or let's have him like, you know, inner dialogue in his head being like, my dearest love, how I missed you, you know.
Even Gravity, which just came out, which should have not had a great deal of dialogue, they managed to keep talking or to keep saying things. So it's interesting to me, and you know, in some ways that was a mistake, but it's interesting to me that they just said no, you know. According to you, he doesn't speak very much at all. Like, it's just FaceTime and whatever's going on. So if you compare it to something like Gravity, does it work without the dialogue?
Oh, yeah, easily. And I think after watching this, I wonder if Gravity would have benefited more from having this. Gravity had some pretty corny dialogue.
Actually, that's one of the first things that Travis and I talked about when we saw it, is just the dialogue was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so said it's just, I mean, like, it's not mind-blowing. It only released, I think the widest release it had was 450 theaters. For some reason, Robert Redford said that they didn't put money and marketing behind it, but it's at 100% on OK.com.
Wow.
And it did, and it's really well on Rotten Tomatoes as well, so it's worth checking out.
I also saw on OK.com it's sitting at a 12 rating. The film's PG-13.
Yes.
Would you agree with a 12 rating on that?
Yeah, and it could have been even less. The one of the words he does say in the movie happens to be the F-bomb.
Of course it does.
But if you're out in the middle of the ocean, you see what happens, I guess, if you're like, well, you know.
A lot of people might make that their one word.
Yes. Yeah, so it's nothing. I mean, yeah.
Does he, is there any violence or gore that someone would have to close their eyes?
No.
Nothing?
Nope.
I'm good.
Is it,
20 questions.
Yeah, I was going to say it's 20 questions all of a sudden. Is it the type of thing, for example, Travis and I have talked about, even though Travis hasn't seen the film, but Kurt, I know you've seen the film and we've talked about it at length, but a film like Buried, for example, where the whole thing takes place inside the coffin in that one box, and even though it's just Ryan Reynolds the entire time, it's an incredibly tense film. You know, it kind of has you white knuckled and stuff. Is All Is Lost kind of that, or is it more of kind of cerebral, you know, your thoughts?
See, there is a couple of tense moments, but you think, like you said, like, it's so different than I thought what the Hollywood norm would be. Like, there's no parts where it's like, you know, when the boat's sinking, he's like not his foot doesn't get stuck in between two boards, you know, and he's like, how am I going to get out of this, you know, and his shoe and comes undone, you know?
When he says a dialogue, my foot appears to be stuck between two boards and I can't get it loose. What now?
Yes. And so there's like nothing of that, but it's still at the same time, it's just fascinating. Like, it's just, I mean, some of the eerie sounds of just him being out there by himself and stuff. It's just, it's worth a gander. You might come back next week and be like, you owe me an hour and 45 minutes of my life back. But I'm sticking with it. All Is Lost. Go check it out at Redbox. And if you don't like it, I'll give you 29 cents. So you only spend a buck.
So. Very nice.
You heard that, everybody. Kurt's 29 cent guarantee on All Is Lost. All right. Well, there's your Redbox pick. With me today, with my Netflix pick, I'm going a little bit old school, early 90s. But I'm going with the Rainmaker. starring Matt Damon and Danny DeVito. I don't know why Kirk keeps laughing at this whenever I say this, but he finds it hilarious. The Rainmaker is not a comedy. It's actually the adaptation of the John Grisham book by the same name. And I hadn't seen this movie in a long time. Actually, I don't think I'd seen it since I'd seen it in the theater. And when I saw it in the theater, I wasn't super taken by it. I think, again, it's a John Grisham novel that's kind of more of the, you know, not action in your face, but more so of the story that's going on. And so possibly when I saw it the first time when I was younger, I just got maybe a little bit bored with it. But as I watched it again, I was surprised with how intriguing it is, how well acted it is. And it's just, it's actually a really good movie. I was surprised by that. Matt Damon's great in it. I love Danny DeVito. You throw him in a movie and I'm probably going to be into it.
That's why I laugh every time I think of it. Danny DeVito just screams comedy. So every time I just think anything with Danny DeVito, I'm just like...
He definitely is the comic relief in it, though.
This is a Francis Ford Coppola movie. Uh-huh. So, I mean, look, the guy's got chops. He knows how to direct a film. I don't feel like... I wouldn't think this was one of his films because it's a little more, I think, commercial and cut a little quicker than something like The Godfather. But it's still, I mean, we're talking a competent director taking a pretty good story, and you have a really good cast. I mean, even Claire Danes is really good in it. So,
yeah, and it's funny you bring up Francis Ford Coppola because, let's be honest, it's been a while since Francis Ford Coppola has really done something that's that great.
Right. This brought him out. He's like, you know what? This is the project that I need to do.
Well, I mean, looking at his history here, like if you jump on IMDb and look what he's done, I mean, like obviously he's done some amazing things with, you know, The Godfather, Apocalypse Now. I mean, it's Francis Ford Coppola. But honestly, since The Godfather 3, which was not received very well, especially considering the first two, you've got Dracula, which I guess wasn't too bad. And then you have a bunch of just not good movies. Jack, that's right. We talked about Jack with Robin Williams not long ago.
Okay. Yeah, that was not a good movie.
Yeah, Travis was about to go postal when we were talking about it. But The Rainmaker, in all honesty, it's a surprisingly well-done film. And looking at Francis Ford Coppola and what he's done in the past while, I would say that The Rainmaker was probably his last good movie that he made.
But it was a good movie. I agree with you. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, he also made a movie with Val Kilmer that went straight to Redbox. This is not a joke. It was called Twixt, and it has nothing to do with the candy bar.
Oh, dang it.
Yeah, sorry. You're going to be super disappointed. But yeah, The Rainmaker, it is really well done. I mean, it's the source material is John Grisham, who, you know, writes great stuff. They don't always make the films into great movies, but this one, it really is really well done. It's a bit of a slower pace. It's not like The Firm or, you know, one of those types of movies where it's kind of faster paced and a lot more going on, but it's well written, it's well acted, it's well directed, and definitely worth another look. I wouldn't be surprised if there were a lot of people that were like me. They saw it that first time and didn't really click with them. I'd say give it another shot. And it's streaming on Netflix. It's there for you to just check out already. There you go.
Agreed. It's free.
It's free. I guarantee you're free that you're going to like it.
No 29 cent guarantee.
No 29 cent guarantee here. But there you go. My Netflix pick of the week, The Rainmaker from 1997, which leaves us with Travis for his Amazon Prime pick. And it's ridiculous how excited I am about this one.
Do you like this movie?
I love this movie.
Oh, John loves this movie.
Kurt laughs at me, but I love this movie.
I was a little bit hesitant to bring it up because I didn't know what you two thought about this movie. But this is actually a family favorite, so I had to throw it out when I saw it on Amazon. This is one of those movies that makes me, as much as I love Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones, makes me a little bit sad that Tom Selleck didn't have his chance, you know? Makes me kind of hate Magnum P.I. because there was a whole career for Tom Selleck out there.
It just didn't happen.
And it didn't happen. And I would have loved to see him do Indiana Jones, but the film is Quigley Down Under. And not only does it have a great lead in Tom Selleck, but the best bad guy working today, Alan Rickman, is just anything he does that's bad is just phenomenal. Even though it's usually the same guy, I can watch him be the bad guy in every film.
Basically, in Quigley Down Under, he's Snape with a handlebar mustache.
Right.
He's an Australian accent.
They make him really evil by just his complete disregard for life. And so on a high level, the story's about an American who applies for a job in Australia, goes all the way to Australia because he's such an amazing long shot. You know, he's basically got this kind of sniper rifle that he uses. And Alan Rickman's character would like to kill all the Aborigines within a certain area of his property. So once Quigley finds out that that's what he was hired for, he doesn't take to it as well as Alan might think. And he, you know, punches him in the face, which causes this long chain of events that leads to this great, one of the great clever endings. Like when Westerns have really good endings, I think this is one of the endings that's really clever. And if you don't know how it ends, it's just a really fun kind of wink at the audience. Like, yeah, he was as cool as you thought he was. So one of my dad's all time favorite movies. So I saw it several times growing up. And my wife and I put it on just for nostalgic sake recently and really, really loved it again. So Quigley Down Under.
I don't know what it is about this. I guess it's the same kind of thing that Travis is saying. It kind of has that Indiana Jones feel, if you will, kind of that adventure, almost sort of swashbuckling, even though it's not pirates, you know.
Right.
But it is a lot of fun. And who can turn down a movie that's directed by the same guy that directed Operation Dumbo Drop?
That's a good point. That's, you know, I hadn't even considered that.
Right.
You know, I think one of the things is the protagonist here is one of those unstoppable protagonists where it's like he's going to get you. And the audience is just waiting to see how he's going to finish off the bad guy because he's that good. And so it's not one of those movies where it's the good guy and the bad guy and they wrestle it out. You just know that the good guy is so fantastic at what he does, and it's just fun to watch someone with that many skills. It's just a fun movie to enjoy.
Yeah. My only complaint is Lara San Giacomo, who plays Crazy Cora.
Yeah.
I've never liked her, and she kind of drives me nuts in the movie. But I don't know. That's the only complaint that I would really have about it.
She didn't really go. I mean, she did like a couple, I think, critically well-received films, but her career never went anywhere.
Besides Just Shoot Me.
Right.
The TV show with David Spade.
I never actually saw that TV show, so I didn't realize that that's where she ended up.
That's where she ended up.
No, I know.
No, yeah, I think it's an awesome pick.
Yeah.
Kurt over here.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I don't know if people know, me and John grew up together. It's true. But John loved this movie as a kid. And like loved it.
I probably forced him to watch it more than once.
Yeah. And I liked it as a kid, but I think by then like I was all like Crocodile Dundee'd out, you know, from
sure.
From the first one and stuff. First
Crocodile Dundee. Was it around that time?
It was 90, I have it here, 1990. So it was like it was right around that era. I think Dundee was like late 80s.
Must have been cool to be Australian then.
Yeah.
It was.
So, yeah. Every 10 years or so, it's cool to be an Aussie.
Yeah, so I've seen it more than I'd like to admit with John. Like
it's a good movie.
John loves it. I mean, it's a good movie. I'll give you your picks for it. But
you know what? Actually, I think going back, and I'm just having this memory right now, I think the first time I was supposed to see it, because my parents loved it so much, they gave my friend and me some money to go see the movie. And I think it was one of the first times where we said we were seeing a movie and saw a completely different R-rated movie, which I can't remember right now. It may have been like Child's Play 2 or something. But yeah, so the first time I was supposed to see it, I never even saw it.
There you go. Travis was a terrible son. Well, the thing
and this was better than Child's Play 2, if that was the movie.
It was.
Yes.
I'll give you that. So it is a great pick. And you know what? Quigley Down Under is also playing on Netflix, so that's kind of a twofer that you have there, both on Amazon Prime and Netflix. So there you go, your picks of the week. We have All Is Lost from Redbox from Curtis, Quigley Down Under for Amazon and Netflix from Travis, and then my pick was The Rainmaker from Netflix. There you go. Those are three movies that you just get to waste your weekend away with. You're welcome. There you go.
All fine films.
So, you know, the next thing we're going to talk about actually kind of falls in line with some of what Kurt was talking about with All Is Lost, but a special trailer was released for the film Unbroken. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's actually due out in theaters not till Christmas, so Christmas of this year, directed by Angelina Jolie, and it's the true story of Louis Zamperini. And Louis Zamperini was an Olympic runner, long-distance runner, and he actually ran in the 1936 Berlin Olympics. And not long after that, he entered the war effort with the Air Corps and was actually shot down in action in the Pacific, spent 47 days on the open water, just to be saved by the Japanese, which then put him in a Japanese prison camp for years after that. It's an incredible story that's in the book Unbroken, the same title by Laura Hillenbrand. But the first trailer came out, and I'm kind of excited to talk about this because I'm someone who has read the book, who is really interested in the story. Both Travis and Kurt have not read the book, but they were able to watch the trailer. So I actually want to start there, guys, not knowing much about the story, but checking out this trailer, which is definitely unorthodox when it comes to trailers. It's over 3 minutes long. It's narrated by Tom Brokaw, almost like it's a news story, kind of talking about this, but it's also the first glimpse that we got at the footage from the film. What are you guys' thoughts? Is it something that you're now interested in, or is it still kind of up in the air with what you're thinking about this film?
Let me just say, actually, the one of the most interesting things to me is something that Curtis brought up before, which is the writers are the Coen brothers.
Right.
Which immediately makes you think, oh, this is going to be a good film. But that's not as interesting to me as the fact that Richard LaGravenese, I think that's how you say his name, is also one of the writers. And if you don't know him, he wrote Beautiful Creatures and P.S. I Love You, to what I consider not as great movies as the Coens are putting
what?
Out.
What?
So my question is, what's interesting to me? The story's interesting. We've talked a little bit about this before. Angelina Jolie is she has an okay, you know, title to her directing credit. So that's interesting. The Coens are interesting. How did this guy get it pulled into the mix? And what does that mean? Like, why do they need him when they already had a lot of talent going into this?
One interesting thing, it says William Nicholson did a rewrite on it, and he's the guy from wrote Gladiator and Les Miserables from last 2 years ago, and so maybe he had to go through and redo all what he did. So I'm just kidding.
See, my thing was going to be is I wonder if this first guy had taken a pass at it, and then they went and like, Coen Brothers, please save this movie. I don't know, because truth be told, from the source material, it kind of feels like it's hard to screw this movie up.
Well, let me say one thing that concerns me about it as a movie, because you were very, very much in love with the story.
Right.
And obviously a lot of the people behind it are. But we just talked about this, and I hate to compare this story to RoboCop, but we just talked about this last week, which is
basically one and the same, right?
It seems like three different stories. When you talk about what this guy goes through, there's the Olympic aspect, there's the fact that he's in the middle of the ocean for 40 some odd days, and then there's the hey, I was captured by Japanese soldiers story, and that doesn't work very often. In most cases where they try to put, in fact, one case that just comes to my head may not be the perfect example, but since RoboCop was the last one, I'm on a roll here, a series of unfortunate events with who was
Jim
that?
Carrey.
Jim Carrey, thank you. That was they took the first three books and tried to make it more meaty, but because of that, it went from story to story to story, and it didn't work as a film. So that's my biggest concern. That and the weird writing credits. it concerns me when people try to jam three stories, and I know it's his story, but it's tough to do on film.
And I understand that. What's funny is I read the book, I had that thought, knowing that they were making it into a movie, that Angelina Jolie was directing it. I literally did have the thought, this may make more sense if they make more than one movie, but at the same time, this is kind of a hard subject to do more than one movie with. The only thing that I can really think of, because in the book, and obviously a book like this is going to be much more in-depth because you have, you know, unlimited pages basically that you can write, as opposed to having to keep a movie within a certain time period. But the film starts out with his early life with his parents, who moved from, you know, New York to California, him growing up, getting in trouble, then getting to the Olympics. And then from the Olympics, all the time that he spent, you know, in training with the Air Corps and everything, you know, and it has this really long stuff. And then even after the prison camps, there's a lot to the book. I mean, that's not where the book
ends.
So
that's not even the ending.
No, there's a lot more to it. My guess, my prediction on how this will work, you'll have montage-ish type things, not like Rocky IV montages, but...
That was like one montage. Like it was just a movie of
Rocky IV was a montage, yes. Yeah. But his early life is probably going to be kind of glassed over a little bit. They'll probably spend a little bit of time with the Olympics because it actually is fascinating. I mean, he's in 1936 Berlin. I mean, it was a fascinating time what was going on. My guess is the training isn't a whole bunch that they have. They'll probably almost jump right into him being shot down. They'll probably spend just a little bit of time of him on the ocean, which is kind of unfortunate because it's an amazing story that happens there. My guess is the bulk of it's going to be that prison camp, the Japanese prison camp, which again, which is hard because all of these are incredibly amazing stories that are told this whole time. But that would be my guess that the bulk of it is spent there, which for those who haven't read the book, it'll probably be really exciting still because of this amazing, you know, transformation that he went through. For those of us who have read the book, we're going to be the annoying ones that are telling you like, well, do you know what they didn't have in the book? They forgot to talk about this and this. But me personally, having read the book and knowing the story, looking at the footage and kind of what they're doing, I'm actually really excited about this to see what they're going to do with it.
Yeah, just watching the trailer, I was watching it with you guys in here, and I understand it's the Olympics, so I've seen like the first like minute of the trailer is all about the Olympic stuff, and it was kind of like, all right, you know. But then once they got into him being lost at sea, that's when I was like, woo, you know, and that's what really caught my interest. You know, this happens. I hope this is more of a story about a guy that was in the military and lost at sea and got into the prisoners' camp than it is more about the Olympic side. That's really cool. He's an Olympian. But I hope it focuses more on that side of aspect of it.
And that's definitely what the story is. If they don't, if they focus on the Olympics and just do a little bit of the other stuff, then they should take, you know, the Oscars away from the Coen brothers. but I can't imagine that they would spend too much time on that. But my guess is the reason they spent more time on it in the trailer is because it was tied in with the Olympics and it was a special Olympics preview.
Yes. Well, so. we know Curtis likes a good out at sea movie from the Redbox pick.
Yeah.
He has Castaway posters all over his house.
McHale's Navy.
Down Periscope.
One thing I like about the marketing that they've done so far, that picture of Angelina Jolie with Louis Zamperini, is that how you say his name? It's a perfect picture. Like, she's obviously in love with the material. She's in love with this figure. And I don't think anything has sold this movie more to me than that picture of how much she has a relationship with this person.
Right. And, you know, I think that's an interesting concept that you bring up, because a lot of times a film is so much better when the person making it really is committed to it and passionate about the project. And that looks like that's exactly what's happening here.
Yeah, you can tell when the director cares about the film and when he's been paid or she's been paid X amount of dollars to, you know, to go through the motions.
Right.
And this seems like a passion project for her.
So I'll be interested to see how that turns out. But it's going to be a while before then, because again, this doesn't come out until Christmas Day of 2014. So we've got several months before then. So
I'll hibernate till then.
In the end, I hated that trailer, though. I don't like that concept at all, that making it kind of a newsreel / fiction. It feels like, I don't know, it feels like when someone's telling a story and then all of a sudden there's a dramatization of it playing at the same time, and it's always so hokey and cheesy to me. So I hope the marketing gets better than that.
Debbie Downer over here.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I'll admit it was kind of strange the way they did it. And truth be told, there were some moments that you were watching and you just wanted to see those visuals and be wrapped up in it, and then all of a sudden Tom Brokaw jumps back in and kind of killed the moment.
Yeah, it almost seems like a comedy when Tom Brokaw, you don't know if it's someone impersonating
him. Shut up,
him.
Tom. Exactly. Yeah. So there you go, Unbroken trailer. You can actually check that out. We should have it up on the website, and it's also on KSL.com where you can see that. But speaking of trailers, there's a big one that's coming out. The teaser trailer just released. They're about to release the full-length trailer on Jimmy Kimmel Live, but that is Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. And I think we have a bit more to talk about with this, but let's just start with Guardians of the Galaxy. First of all, we have mentioned this before. A pet peeve of mine is the trailer for the trailer. And that's exactly what we got.
And here we are promoting that, by the way. Here we are talking about that.
It's been a slow week, everybody.
Yes.
3 Days to Kill opens up this weekend. I don't know what else to say. It's been a slow week. But you've got it's honestly, I think it's an 18-second teaser for the full-length trailer that's going to be released. But let me ask this. This is the Marvel Universe. This is – we've already talked about it. It's not a property that's very well-known. And – to jump right to the chase, you have Chris Pratt, who I think is supposed to be a human. You have a raccoon. You have a tree. You have an alien.
Wait. You don't just have a raccoon. You have Bradley Cooper.
Playing a raccoon.
It's Bradley Cooper.
Vin Diesel playing a tree.
That's a problem.
Which is, well, did I need to say Vin Diesel's playing a tree? Couldn't I have just said Vin Diesel?
Exactly.
Zoe Saldana is playing an alien, and Batista, the wrestler, is also playing an alien. So
the only thing missing is like Keanu Reeves playing a chair or something like that.
You Marvel haters.
I'm sorry. I know that this was only 18 seconds, and I love Chris Pratt. I'm a huge Chris Pratt fan, and I like Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
And James Gunn, the guy that's directing it, he's known for his campy horror films, and he's actually a lot of fun. I have no interest in seeing this movie. Even from the 18 seconds that I saw, I have no interest in seeing this movie.
Let me just say, before we go too far in this, this is one of the few films where I actually feel like the teaser for the trailer is appropriate because...
Sure you do, Travis.
Everything is riding on this trailer. Everyone knows that this is just out there. And if they can't sell this, if they can't sell the idea that they've nailed it and that it's worth watching, they're hosed. Because this, like you guys are saying, this concept is so far out there that if this trailer doesn't say, hey, by the way, look, it looks cool, it looks like this works, then we're all in trouble. And I think this was part of the problem with the Edward Norton Incredible Hulk, and even the Hulk before it. In the trailers, the Hulk never looked good. People never bought off that they wanted to see that character. So they have two CG leads in this movie, and if they can't sell the fact that these characters have weight, that they can perform with other actors, you're going to lose people right away. So because this trailer, so much is riding on this trailer, I actually think this is the one exception where a teaser to the trailer... It's kind of appropriate. Yeah.
Well, this is undoubtedly Marvel's biggest gamble.
No question.
I mean, with Iron Man, he wasn't necessarily a central figure, right, in comic books, but he was at least a recognizable figure. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you got an Academy Award nominated actor in Robert Downey Jr. to play the part. So right there immediately you have some weight to this, you know? But with this all of a sudden, I mean, it's a property that almost nobody knows. You have Chris Pratt. People like him from Parks and Rec or the Lego movie. But at the same time, most people are just like, oh, it's that guy from Parks and Rec. You know, it's not like he's that household name kind of thing. And like I said, James Gunn, this was interesting to me that they take basically their biggest gamble and give it to a guy to direct it that's basically going to be their biggest gamble on top of that. Like I said, James Gunn is known for two things: campy horror movies and the ex-husband of Jenna Fischer from The Office. I think that's about it. But I'm excited to see the full-length trailer to see if I still hate it. And I'll be honest, everything in me honestly wants to like this movie mainly because of Chris Pratt. Because I still think he should be the new Han Solo. I truly believe that Chris Pratt should be Han Solo. But I'm not buying into it right now.
Did I give you grief for that?
You did it first.
Yeah, I like the idea. I really like the idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, to me, I thought it was going to be more comedy based, to be honest with you. And they casted Chris Pratt, and seeing that trailer today, I'm like, I mean, there was nothing like, I mean, they can't show much in 19 seconds to get a humor across, but, you know, on the IMDb, it says action, adventure, and sci-fi, nothing like, and comedy. I'm pretty sure they'll have their little jabs in there, but I thought for sure this was going to be more of the comedy side of the Marvel world. Like, you know, you have a raccoon that talks and a tree, you know? And so watching the thing, I was like, wow, they're really going for the action sci-fi, like totally out there, you know, comic book movie.
But when the raccoon talks, it's got the voice of Bradley Cooper.
Oh, Travis. Kurt, I have a feeling that this is going to be very Iron Man 3-ish. Because if you remember when those first trailers came out for Iron Man 3, it seemed very dark. It seemed like it was probably going to be the most serious of the Iron Man films. And when we actually saw it, it was the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Did you guys like Iron Man 3?
I liked it better.
I don't want to get too sidetracked, but
I liked it better than 2. Yeah. I still don't think it rose to the level of the original, though.
Well, the original was so good and so unexpected.
Yeah. When it comes to Marvel movies, I do think that 3 was probably one of the better Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I guess I had a hard time because the first one set the bar so high that everything else is like, yeah, it wasn't bad, but it for sure wasn't 1, if that makes sense. And like I said, I think I've said this before, but I kind of lost some of my interest in it when it turned into Lethal Weapon.
Right. No, I agree with that. I think of it more of a Tony Stark movie than an Iron Man
movie.
Oh,
yeah. Absolutely.
And so I kind of don't include it in the Iron Man series. And it was like, and then one day Tony Stark went and did this. And you.
Yeah. Instead of Iron Man 3, it should have been Tony Stark 1.
Exactly.
Yeah. And honestly, with that movie, you have, it's set during Christmas time, Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
You have the two buddies that are partners with Mel Gibson, Danny Glover, but this time it's Don Cheadle, Tony Stark. They break into a mansion to save some hostages. Lethal Weapon, Iron Man 3. They break onto some docks like a barge.
Shipping yard.
Lethal Weapon, Iron Man 3. The guy who directed it, Shane Black. Lethal Weapon, Iron Man 3.
And one more.
Kiss, kiss, bang, bang.
That was pretty good, though, wasn't it?
Oh, is that what you were talking about?
No, Monster Squad. Oh, I always Monster like Squad. To go back to Monster Squad.
If anything ever ends in Monster Squad, it's always been it's always been good. But you know, we're running out of time here. But you know, Kurt and I have mentioned this before, and I think that maybe Travis is a bit more liberal with it. And that's not that it's a bad thing. If anything, it's that Kurt and I lack creativity, I guess. But Kurt and I tend to lean more so towards. Kind of more based in reality, even if it's not totally based in reality, at least an explanation for what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the Marvel movies miss a lot of that, and I can only imagine how much it's going to miss here on Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, so I had a course with Brandon Sanderson. I'm not sure if you guys know him as an author, but he's a really, I think, a quite clever author, and he's known for making these really elaborate magic systems. And those are kind of hard to follow sometimes, especially in fantasy literature. But one rule that he gave us as a class that I've always listened to was you have to decide how much magic is going to solve in your story. And if magic wins the day, if magic is the reason that everyone is happy in the end, it solves things, then you have to define the rules of that magic system. So like with Gandalf, nobody knows how that works. Gandalf goes, he points his staff from time to time, and it never really gets them out of too much trouble. But in situations where the entire plot rests on this magical spell, you've got to lay the rules down. That makes for compelling storytelling. And I think with something as far-fetched as Guardian of the Galaxies, it all comes down to what the rules are. So we're talking about space travel. We're talking about talking raccoons and talking trees. And there's all sorts of crazy wrapped up into this. But if they define a universe where that works and they don't break their own rules and those rules are compelling, it's fine. I can enjoy it. I can get behind it. So I don't need it to be a real story. I just need the rules to be consistent.
Which is why I like Monster Squad.
Yes.
No, but I totally agree. And when you really break it down, that's kind of brilliant what Sanderson is saying is it's not that you can't be outlandish and crazy and mythical and everything else, but if you start breaking your own rules, then that me personally, that's when you have lost me. That's why Iron Man to me worked so well. It was outlandish. This guy is not going to be able to create this suit of iron that can do all these things, you know, with like a few scrap pieces that he has in a cave. But the way that they were able to put the science together and everything else in that backstory, it was fantastic. It flowed together. It was a well-written story. But, you know I pick on Marvel a lot, but a lot of the other films, Thor, Captain America, to me, missed out on a lot of that. And that's why I think it detached me so much from really getting into those characters and into those films.
I think Thor is inherently flawed because of that. There are no rules, and so they can do whatever they want, and it's this crazy magic that they never explain.
Even with that, though, they set up rules almost inadvertently, and then they turn around and break those rules once again.
Right.
And I am sick and tired of when I bring this up and hearing fans say, like, well, it's because he's Thor. It's like, that is not an answer. I don't care what you say.
Right.
But I think that's a great point, because if you can pull that off and you can give me a reason behind these things, I can get behind it. Star Wars. If you give me a reason behind these rules and how these things work, I can get more behind it.
Actually, you bring up Star Wars. But this might be a bad example, because as soon as they start talking about midichlorians, you know.
I did not say Star Wars episodes 1, 2, and 3. But, I did not say that.
They go too far with the rules there, and they create these additional rules where the original trilogy worked with the Force not really having a whole lot to it, but you knew the Force still didn't do too much. The Force moved things, and that was about it, and sometimes guided you. But so again, the Force wasn't really solving anything. It was just this cool thing that they didn't have to explain. So it still really does fall back into it, and then it falls apart when they start overly defining it. But come on, Curtis, what are your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I think a great movie that shows like the good explaining is Inception. I mean, like, you follow that along, they go through and they create the whole world, all the rules, everything down. I know John's smiling. John would marry.
I have an unhealthy obsession with this film.
Yeah, John loves Nolan. But it's a great example of like they created this, you know, this little world they have. You can go inside people's dreams and they have all sorts of rules, everything following it, that you buy into it. Mm-hmm. You know, even though when you sit back and you're like, that's not possible.
Yeah, well, and Travis even brings up the point, like with Star Wars, the original. In Inception, they're not sitting there and explaining like, this is how they came up with the, you know, technology to do this and dream sharing and da-da-da. There's a little thing that explains a little bit about it, but at the same time, since they're not breaking their own rules, you're not just like, wait a minute, what? This doesn't even make sense. Where did this come from? You didn't, you know, there's some mystery that's okay as long as you're not turning around and breaking your own rules over and over and over again. For example, your girlfriend gets injected with some evil presence. Example, Thor 2, and everyone that touches the girlfriend gets blown away except for Thor. But again, when I bring this up, what's the answer? Well, it's because he's Thor.
You know, it all comes down to when you're kids and you're playing with that guy that makes up the game, and as he starts to lose, he starts to make up new rules. That's when you know your storytelling is in problem. Yeah, there's a problem with your story when you're making up rules
as you go along.
They never existed. Yeah. But that's how you have to get out of a situation.
No, when you pass go, you only collect $200 if your name starts with a J.
Exactly.
That's in the. I'll read it to you.
That wasn't a real rule. Thanks, John.
Yeah. Well, I'll be. When I say that I have no real interest in seeing Guardians of the Galaxy, that's really a lie because I am intrigued to see how they pull it off. Mm-hmm. Because again, James Gunn, he's made movies like Slither, for example, which is ridiculous beyond belief. It's so dumb, but at the same time, it's so campy that you can't help but enjoy it at times. But it is the same kind of thing where he sets up these ridiculous rules, but he still tends to play by them in these films. So I'll be interested to see what he pulls off. But at the same time, this is a much bigger budget. There's a lot more micromanaging going on behind the scenes with the studios that are involved in this. And I think it's a huge risk that they're taking. I think it's going to make money. Like I don't see a Marvel movie, honestly, not making money. But I don't know if it's going to be the success that they really want it to be to really spawn all these franchises on top of it. It's going to have to be really good to do that.
It's tying into the next Avengers movie. My understanding is Captain America 2 has a lot to do with the next Avengers movie. But also, I think they're incorporating this these Guardians of the Galaxy. And I think that they're also going to be setting up for Marvel's Phase 3, mm-hmm. which will include Ant-Man and some of their lesser-known characters. So
lesser-known characters? Yes. Well, that makes me wonder, is, you know, the Winter Soldier, is he going to be one of the bad guys now in the Avengers 2?
The Winter Soldier is Zoolander. We've talked about this, John. There's that shot in the trailer where he turns and gives still.
So the Avengers 2 is really just Zoolander 2.
Yes.
So Derek Zoolander ends up being an Avenger. And
it would be a nice twist.
I'd see that movie.
I'd see that movie, too. Well, guys, thanks so much for listening. We love being on here. We love doing the show. And thanks to you guys for listening, or else we'd have no reason to do the show. We're going to come back next week. We're going to have your picks for you. Probably going to have a retro review for you as well. If you have a retro review for us where we watch an old movie, let you know if it's worth revisiting it again. You can hit us up on Twitter at FlixJunkies and with the hashtag retro review of what movie you want us to watch. Also, make sure you go over to OK.com, check out movie ratings, what age appropriateness level for certain films. You can also figure out, you know, if you're taking your family to a movie, if it's appropriate to take your little one with you or not. And that's actually where Kurt Linnell comes from, and we love having him on the show from OK.com.
I appreciate you letting me be here. A couple things coming up this week for OK.com. There's some more articles coming out, some movies you should watch this weekend. But also, we're giving away two tickets to the movie The Son of God that comes out next Friday, a week from Friday, I believe. And so go to facebook.com/ok.com to get your name entered in for that, and you can win yourself 2 tickets to see that movie. So, but thanks for having me, too.
Yeah. When you give away free stuff, we'll have you on.
Yeah.
That works. But again, thanks for listening. We look forward to hearing from you next week. Make sure you visit us on Twitter, Facebook, and online. But for Travis Poppleton and Curtis Linnell, I am John Clyde, and we'll talk to you soon. 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 Soon.